Speakeasy.
Words.
Lingo.
Speakeasy.
Language.
Speakeasy on ABC Radio Perth.
And today on Speakeasy, we will be poring through a book on Daniel's shelf called Verbal Pitfalls from 1883. Daniel, good morning. Welcome back. And what is this book all about?
This book is It's a grammar guide from 1883, and it is bonkers. There's all kinds of advice in here. Some of it quite good. Some of it we still use today, and some of it which you look at and you say, this is bananas. It was compiled by a C.W. Bardeen in 1883. You can read it. You can read it online on archive.org. It's just look for verbal pitfalls. He was compiling lots of advice from lots of grammar guides, and he didn't always like the advice. Sometimes he would put it in there and say, now I disagree with this, and here's why. Some of the advice was just silly, and he realized that. But some of it, you know, is pretty straight-faced, like, oh, you shouldn't do this thing.
Can you give us some examples?
Right.
You've got some favorites.
Here we go.
Okay.
You're not testing us, I hope.
No, but I will ask you what your judgment is. Would you ever say, my tire's flat, so I'll have to take somebody else's bicycle? Would you ever say that? Somebody else's bicycle?
Somebody else, another bike.
Take somebody else's, does it sound fine?
Somebody else's bicycle.
Sounds fine.
Yeah?
How do you feel about somebody's else bicycle?
Uh-huh. Oh, no.
Because that's what Mr. Verbal Pitfalls is telling us we ought to say. So long as, he says, these words are regarded as two and written as two, the better usage would seem to be somebody's else. I won't take anybody's else advice.
I actually don't think I could physically say that.
It's a bit of a tongue twister, isn't it? Yet, this is the kind of thing that people in 1883 would defend with a straight face. Odd or what?
Okay. Hit me with another one.
When you talk about eating some peas... Mm-hmm. Does it end with the letter? What letter does that end with?
S.
Not E? Surely.
S-P-E-A-S.
Okay. Well, now there's a bit of a story here because right now we talk about eating some peas with an S, but in 1883 it was complicated. You can have a pea, but in the 1600s you wouldn't have a pea, a green vegetable. You would have a peas. P-E-A-S-E, which is why in the nursery rhyme we talk about peas porridge hot, peas porridge cold. Those are peas. But now, it's changed a little bit.
Are you familiar with that nursery rhyme?
No.
Neither am I.
What? Peas porridge hot, peas porridge cold, peas porridge in the pot, nine days old.
Yes.
People, come on, give us some texts here. Tell them that I'm not making this up.
It was not one that I regularly recited.
Okay, fair enough. Well, in the 1600s, people looked at that S and they thought, well, that's an S. Must be plural. What do you call one of those things? I don't know. A pea?
Right. So they backed it up.
So in 1883, we were still in a bit of flux. Was it peas? Was it pea? And so Mr. Bardeen splits the difference and says, if you have like three peas on your plate, then that's with an S. But if you're talking about a can full of peas, spell it P-E-A-S-E.
Okay. I've got a text kind of related.
I'm ready.
Larry says, excuse me, when did public toilets go... You read it. I've got a frog in my throat there.
Okay.
Ribbon there.
When did public toilets go from being for people of a particular gender, example, ladies' toilets, to toilets having their own gender, female toilets?
That's right. It's not a ladies' toilet. It's a female toilet. It's marked for – I don't know when this started, but I do think it's interesting. Female is going through its own sort of flux nowadays. It would be about 50 years ago that you talk about a female. But now I hear that some women don't like that usage, like it makes you sound like an animal or a cattle or something. And so instead of saying a female, a female comedian, you'd say a woman comedian or a female professor, a woman professor.
Well, I've never thought that deeply about that, but obviously it offends some people.
Let's just turn the river of language a little bit this way, I think is the way that they're
doing it. Okay. You know how you're talking about peas, as in P-E-A-S-E?
Mm.
Somebody's texted peas pudding.
Ah.
Does that relate?
Yeah, same kind of thing. Pudding has a weird history. The names of foods are just bonkers, first of all. Because pudding could be, nowadays I think of pudding as like the mushy stuff, you know, like chocolate pudding, it's smooth. But, you know, we also talk about pudding as being any kind of dessert, which is the British usage. So that's one where the British and American usages definitely have diverged. I got one more thing about dessert. Do you like talking about ice cream? Does that sound okay?
Love ice.
Love ice.
Happy to
cream.
Talk about it.
What about
ice cream?
Mr. Bardeen says, no, do not say. Well, he says this one's okay, but some people complain about ice cream and instead they should say iced cream. Would you like a bit more iced cream?
Well, we say iced coffee.
You can say iced coffee. Iced what about water?
But you have, but you say iced coffee because it's cold or because there's ice in there or both? Either. You don't have ice in ice.
Or because
if you get it from a fancy shop.
Why do we feel like it's iced coffee? Because it's been through the process. You know, somebody had to put ice in there. It's been iced.
Yes.
Whereas the ice cream isn't really iced. You know,
it's freezed.
Cream. It's freezed.
Yes. What about we said, would he have fit on the door?
Good old, spoiler alert, Titanic fans. You've had 20 years to watch it.
Well, Ev clearly hasn't. Thanks for the spoiler alert, guys. Sorry,
I bet that when you go through town and somebody says, Jesus died for your sins, you say, hey, I was reading that. Yeah. He dies?
Ev, the ship sinks.
could have fitted. This is one that's also in flux. A lot of these are, because remember, the language is a steamroller. It's always regularizing. If there's a word that's very common, it's going to resist. Fit is not so common. It might actually get, you know, done. So I took a look in a very handy resource called the Google Ngram Viewer, which is a way of looking up tons of words in millions of books at a few strokes of the keystrokes. And I looked up would have fit and would have fitted. And I also looked up could have fitted. And it looks like would and could have fitted was more common in books until about 1980-something, about 1990, and at which time would have fit or could have fit took over. So exciting.
So, but who started that trend? Just someone started writing it that way and it sticks and you go with it.
Language is a huge crowdsourced venture.
It sounds American to me if I can lay the blame with a country rather than a person.
Oh, sure. Blame Americans.
Yeah.
They're always blaming Americans for stuff like this one, bamboozle. Don't say bamboozle.
That's what he says.
Yeah, don't say that one.
Bardeen. What's the problem with you?
Say it at all.
Just
1883, at least.
So you're not allowed to say bamboozle.
How about this one? Right away for immediately. The grammar guide here says, altogether unjustifiable, long since ceased to be a Boston provincialism. See, blame Americans.
Huh.
If it ever was one and has recently made its way to England also.
10 to 7. And Jinx. Daniel Midgley is here, Jinx again, host of the podcast Talk the Talk, and with us every Thursday morning for Speakeasy. This is a terrific text message. Where does the expression I'm at sixes and sevens come from?
That one, I am not too sure about. I think this is one that I looked up once and I have totally forgotten it. But I think it might, this is my guess, I think it might go back to dice, you know, where you throw, the difference between winning and losing is the difference between throwing a seven and a six. So if you're at sixes and this is just my
game,
guess. I'm not
a craps game.
This is in craps. This is what I remember. I think if you are between sixes and sevens, you're kind of between the devil and the deep blue sea. You don't know if you're going to win or you're going to lose.
You're out of sorts.
You're out of sorts.
It meant.
So that's my guess. I can check that out and come back to you.
If you've got a question for Daniel, like give him a call. He's here for a few more minutes. 1-300-222-720. A lot of you are texting in 0437-922-720. Brendan had a question. Good and evil, is that related to God and devil?
Okay, we started tackling this one a few weeks ago where I mentioned that good and God are great words but not related to each other. Looks like evil and devil have a similarity between them that is only coincidental. Evil comes straight from Old English and devil comes from Greek diabolen, to slander or to attack. I'm told that the word Satan has the same meaning. It's an accuser, somebody who accuses somebody.
Here's a sound to bring you comfort, Daniel.
Peas porridge hot, peas porridge cold, peas porridge in the pot, 9 days old. Some like it hot, some like it cold, some like it in the pot, 9 days old.
There we are. So you weren't imagining it.
Just why you would like it in the pot if it's 9 days old. Right. I could see liking it hot. Some like it hot.
Oh, yeah. Cold, though.
Where that movie title comes from.
Fantastic.
What do you think about head over heels? Would you ever be head over heels for someone?
Oh, I already am.
Oh, I'm sure you are.
Head over heels in love.
Yes.
Mr. Bardeen says, no, this is not the phrase.
Yeah.
It's heels over head. I mean, if your heels over head, you're upside down, right?
You're upside down.
Your head is always over your heels. Why would that be anything special?
Yes.
Because the heels are up.
So this just goes to show that, these phrases do in fact change.
Where does the term layperson come from, asks Susan?
Susan, this one comes straight from Greek laikos, of the people. Uh-huh. And it goes back even older than that. But that's about where it comes from. It does have it's weird to have that be similar to lay, because it sounds like you're laying down or something. But no, it's straight from Greek.
I always get that mixed up and get in trouble for it, laying and lying. You know, when I say somebody was laying down and then people would text, no, eggs lay, that person was lying.
The lay-lie distinction died out in 1883.
Oh.
Let that one go. Don't let anybody give you any crud about laying down or lying down.
Rob's got a good question. Daniel, what does the pitch refer to or mean in the saying pitch black?
Oh, I don't know this one, but I'm going to make a guess, and I'll come back to you if I'm wrong. I think it has to do with the stuff called pitch, you know, the black stuff that's like tar. When it leaks out of a tree, it's sometimes called sap, but sometimes called pitch. And people would say, and there's references to as black as pitch going way, way, way back. And so instead of the phrase sort of changed from black as pitch to pitch black.
There you go. 0437 922 720 is the text if you have a question for Daniel. What about this one? Mm. Jan. Daniel, I've noticed two trends. There is four of them. Not there are.
There is four of them. I know, I noticed myself doing that. I said to someone, there's olives if you want some. Shouldn't I say, there are olives if you want some? So I found some work here by Bonnie Krakey and Catherine Hilton, where they looked at people, young people in California, and whether they said there is, there's, or there are. And what they found was that people don't usually say there is four of them, but they do often say there's four of them, which tells me that there is and theirs are starting to become two different things. And that's interesting.
We're in the middle of an evolution.
We always are, aren't we? We're always in the middle of it. It's swirling around us. And if we get hung up on it, then we miss the flow. You got to go with the flow.
Oh, another good question from Peter.
Yeah?
Where did the word nincompoop come from?
It's got to be German.
That sounds like one of those fanciful constructions from the 1900s, like Lollapalooza.
It's not in your special book?
No, it's not in that one. I've got to look that one up. But it sounds just like, it sounds fanciful, like... I'll have to look that one up. That's on my look list.
Okay.
Talking about
a
peas pudding, let me say, from Jay. The old English is peas pudding and 9 days old is referring to when fires used to have the pot boiling and cooling for days, and it was eaten and added to slowly over those days for all meals.
So they'd use the same pot of water.
Mm.
Yeah.
What? And then?
Probably use the same porridge.
For nine days.
Just added to the porridge.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And just kept making more.
There's some more homework for you here. What's correct? Bound or bounded?
Well, I think they...
Fire warnings on the ABC say the fire is bounded by certain roads. Shouldn't it be bound by?
The sense that I get is that if you say that there are two different words, if you say that it's bounded, then it's surrounded by something. Whereas if I say it's bound, then that's, to my brain, suggests more like tied down. I feel like there's a difference in the two different kinds of bound.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to check that out.
Quick one from Heidi. Should we say I dreamed or I dreamt?
What do you like?
Well,
I say dreamt too,
but when I come to spelling it, I always stop and go, oh, am I doing this right?
There's all kinds of these, aren't there?
Yeah.
I love it.
Learned and learnt.
So it's often considered that things like dreamt and learnt and spelt are British things, and then the ED versions are American. I just took a look in the old Google Ngram corpus, and you can too, books.google.com/NGRAMS. Would you believe that the most common variant is dreamed, and that dreamt, even in books from England, even in books in British English, dreamt is not as common.
I'm wrong again.
Wow. That hurts.
I'm sorry to hear that.
I spell hurts with a Z, though. thank you, Daniel.
It's a pleasure.